Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Winning cures everything. Now for your hosts, Gary and Chris.
Welcome in Winning Cures Everything. It is the Monday, June 14th edition of the show. I'm Gary.
And I'm Chris.
And of course, again, audio only podcast. And it feels like the good old days. I feel more in my element when people cannot see me. I think that's my best way of going forward. You kind of feel the same, Chris?
Yeah, I agree. When you shared a clip of our show out on Twitter, it had video on it, though, and I wasn't prepared for that last week.
So I'm doing that more as a highlight thing because on Twitter, The videos get more views. They get more, more clicks.
But you got to let a brother know so I can actually have lights on and halfway look decent.
Well, so you see what I look like today.
Right. Well, that's irrelevant what you look like. You know what you're doing. You're cognitive of what's going to happen with the feed. I am not. I'm just a dancing monkey. I come on. The light turns on. I talk. I turn it off. And I go back downstairs and go back to my life.
I can understand where you're coming from. So I will try and do a better job of letting you. Well, I mean, now you know. Like, now you know what's up.
Now I know. I turned the light on today. I took a shower before here.
So here's.
I just got in from the yard.
So yeah. Here's what I do. I record every show on video, even though we're doing the audio-only podcast, because if anything happens with the memory card
have the video. I trust you. We've been doing this for, 5-6 years now?
Yeah, it's been a while.
I'm not worried about that. If you're going to share it out after you told me we're not sharing this video out, you got to tell me.
So those videos are only the highlight videos. We might get to a point where we put it up and, like, you know, only the people that are subscribed to the channel can watch it on YouTube or something like that. I think there's a way to do that, but we'll have to see. So you'll have to actually subscribe to be able to see it, but we'll figure it out. Right now, podcast only. That's what we're doing. Podcast only on Mondays and Fridays and Tuesday evening or afternoon live show. That is the way it's going to be going forward. We're not going to change this even during the season. So anybody that hasn't subscribed, go ahead and do that. Let's start off today's show with this thing before we get into the rundown and everything that you need to do. I want to start off with this. Kyler Murray, this story cracked me up to no end, man. So there was apparently he was interviewed by Sports Illustrated for the FaZe Clan. It's a professional esports and entertainment organization based in LA. He was asked about his favorite team growing up. Now, remember, Kyler Murray was he went to high school in Allen, Texas. He was born in Bedford, Texas. Like, he's basically right down the street from the Dallas Cowboys. They asked him about his favorite team growing up, and he said, they asked if he was a Cowboys fan. He said, fuck no. He said, absolutely not. He said, they were always ass. And he said that he was a Minnesota Vikings fan growing up. I thought it was great. So he was born in 97. I am a little bit shocked that, like, the best Cowboys team that he ever saw live was 2007. The team went 13-3. He was 10 years old. 10 years old. He has never seen a good Cowboys, like a really good Cowboys team.
Yeah, Gary, we're old. They've been bad for a long time.
It's unbelievable to me. Like, that is America's franchise.
I would bet. No, it's not America's franchise. That's the problem. It was in the 80s and the 90s.
Yes.
In the 70s and the 60s. I'm telling you, 80% of the people watching this right now have no clue that the Cowboys were. They know about it because they understand the history of sports, but they've never seen it in their life, and they don't understand how people see that as America's team.
It's crazy.
They just don't. Marketing is different now. There was a day and a time where if you were the quarterback of the Cowboys, you were more marketable than any other player. That's just not so now. It's just not.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right.
If you're a great quarterback, it doesn't matter if you play in Green Bay or Arizona or Tampa
Seattle.
Bay. You can be marketable anywhere. We live in a global society today.
It's the same thing with, because everybody always talks about, oh, if you got to play for the Giants, you got to play for the Cowboys, you got to play for whatever. And same thing in the NBA. Oh, you got to play for the Knicks, or you got to play for the Lakers or whatever. No. Giannis Antetokounmpo is fine playing for the Milwaukee Bucks. Everybody knows who he is. It's no problem. So, yeah, it cracked me up. Him saying that the Vikings were his favorite team kind of shocked me until I thought about the fact that it was, you know, it had to be the Randy Moss, Dante Culpepper, or, God, who's the quarterback before that?
No. I think those guys are just about done in Minnesota before he start paying attention to football, too.
And so, at like 2000...
When did Dante Culpepper finish his career?
I'm going to look that up
in Minnesota.
So I would say that, so he was 9 years old in like 2006. So let's see when Dante Culpepper played for the Vikings. You might be right.
That was before that. Culpepper was not the quarterback in 2006.
He would have been young. 2005 was Culpepper's last year. So he was 8 years old at that time.
So I can't explain the Vikings outside of the fact that, I mean, he's just got good taste in colors. He liked the color purple. That's great. But other than that, like, there's nothing else they can equate that to. They weren't great back then. Maybe he was a huge Adrian Peterson fan. I don't know.
That's entirely possible. Let's see. Tavares Jackson was the quarterback in 2007.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Who knows? But the those days, like, if it was from when he was super young, then Culpepper and Moss, that would make sense for him.
So. But it's not when he was super young, though.
The age that they say, like, you generate your fandom the most is, like, what, 12 to...
Yeah, I would say that. Like I fell in love with the Red Sox really early, but that was a very unique thing. And then I didn't know anything about any other sports team at all until I was, you know, 10 to 13.
That tends to make sense. Now, at mine, I mean, obviously, I was young, like really young. So, you know, but that was all family stuff. So it is what it is. Before we go further, everybody check out winningcureseverything.com. That's the website. Forgot to do this at the beginning. SBRPicks.com/NCAAF, our college football show, over with Sportsbook Review. Comes out every Wednesday. You can find it on YouTube. Search out SBR Picks. That is your one-stop shop. If you have not already, of course, subscribe to the podcast and review it wherever you get it, whether it's Spotify or Apple or what. I think on Spotify it's a follow, I think, and I think there's a way to review on there. I don't know. But either way, Apple Podcasts is still by far our most listened to medium. So if you would so kindly leave a nice review, share the show out, tell your friends about it, and make us seem cool. We would certainly appreciate that. The biggest story that happened over the weekend was Christian Eriksen, the Denmark midfielder, collapsed on the field Saturday morning in a game, and you want to talk about scary. Like, I had just turned on the TV and was able to see it. Like, I had no idea what was going on. I turned it on. I see, like, people are freaking out a little bit. It seems like some people in the crowd really didn't have any idea what was going on, and then you see all these people huddled around somebody. I flipped it off after, you know, 5-10 minutes because I couldn't figure out what was going on. And, you know, I had the sound down, but I could not figure out what was happening. And the doctors have come out and said that he was, quote, gone. He was resuscitated after suffering a cardiac arrest. Now, we had this happen in a college basketball game. What's the guy's name? Keontae Johnson, I think it was, for Florida. This happened, you know, at the beginning of the college basketball season. This stuff is terrifying. You know, the doctor's name, Morten Bozen, said it was a cardiac arrest. How close were we to actually losing him? I don't know. He said, we got him back after one defibrillator, so that's quite fast. I'm not a cardiologist, so the details I'll leave to the experts at the hospital. It was halted in the 43rd minute, Denmark and Finland. It was resumed later Saturday. Finland ended up winning 1-0. And they named Eriksson star of the match, which, you know, I guess that's just a, I guess that's what you do. But yeah. But man, this seems to happen more regularly. I don't remember this happening when I was a kid. Like, this is kind of strange stuff, right?
I mean, you say regularly. I think it's happened to two athletes. Happened,
right, two athletes, but very recent, and I don't ever remember this happening.
But we just don't have – how many, when we were younger growing up, how many of these – we would have never seen this game. We'd have never seen the basketball game. Like we just wouldn't have seen it unless it was major, major, big-time sports, national sports. It wouldn't have been televised. So everything is televised now. And yeah. So you have an opportunity to see so much more. I guarantee you this stuff happened. Back when we were growing up, guys were doing, you know, cocaine and greenies. So – You know, smoking in the locker room. That, you know, yeah. There's no doubt that they had worse heart problems than we have today.
That's true.
That's just that. I, look, I haven't done the research on it, but I'm just gonna tell you that they had worse heart problems back then. You know, and mixed in a whole shitload of steroids back in the day as well. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm gonna guarantee you that this probably happened more. Doesn't mean that it's not scary as hell. But what's shocking now is the fact that we have so much, our healthcare is so much better, especially for the top tier athletes. They're constantly getting screened and checked and scanned and whatever. And you would think that if he had a serious heart condition, it would have gotten caught at some point in time before this happened. Because that's what happens, right?
Yeah, I mean, they do all kinds of physicals and everything before
who was the NBA player that just retired literally in the middle of the season because he had like a weird heart murmur thing, and that's the second one he's had, and he promised himself, if it ever happens again, I'm just walking away. Because it's not worth my life.
Was it LaMarcus Aldridge?
Yes. That's probably it. That's probably it. I knew it was a big man. You know, wasn't a guard. So
yeah, his heart issue. Let's see, heart condition. He recently joined the Nets, said an irregular heartbeat led to it. Yeah. I get it.
He had a complication once, either during the season or in practice or something. I don't remember the first complication, but I do remember it being talked about after the fact. Yeah. And I remember he said, you know, I'm going to still try to play. I want to play. I love the game. If it ever happens again, I'm walking away. I'm not dying on the court. I'm just not doing that to my family. I don't want to do that for me. And as soon as he had some irregularity, I mean, he walked off the court that night. He went straight to the doctor. He got checked out, and he never came back.
Yep. And smart on him. You remember the other guy, Eddie Curry, had that same kind of thing. And then he fought to come back and actually had a pretty good career after that. But, yeah, he was a highly, highly touted player. And, you know, the complications, he just never quite lived up to the billing. But he had a pretty good NBA career. Like, he didn't live out to be, you know, the next Michael Jordan or anything. But who has, right? Who has? We'll head off to some NFL. So we're doing a little bit of a shorter show today for those that that do not know or you didn't read the description. We have an interview with Ivan Maisel that's going to tag on the very end of this podcast. So we're going to go, you know, short through a couple of more sports stories, and then I'm gonna hit you with some news of the weird. I haven't told you what stories we're going to hit, but I got two of them that I want you to hear about. So we'll do some NFL right quick. Le'Veon Bell. Now, this story absolutely makes no sense to me. Le'Veon Bell said on Instagram, he was replying to somebody, to some comment on Instagram, he said that I'd never play for Andy Reid again. I would retire first. Now, he didn't specify a complaint with Andy Reid. Have you ever heard any player complain about Andy Reid at all?
Well, I've never heard any player. Let me drill this down a little further. Damn sure never heard of an offensive player. Drill down just a hair more further. Andy Reid might be the best running back friendly coach you could have. Kyle Shanahan's probably the best, but Kyle Shanahan's been doing it a fraction of the time Andy Reid's been doing it. So we've got a lifetime, a career for Andy Reid to show that if your a great running back under his system, you will be all-time great. All-time yes. great. And if you're a good running back, you're going to get a big payday by somebody else because I'm going to showcase you in a way in which nobody else has ever showcased you.
Yeah.
So this is Le'Veon being washed and bitter and stupid.
He's
never been accused of being smart. No, never a day in his life. You're right
about that. He was released from the Jets. He played sparingly for the Chiefs. He played in 9 games. He started 2, rushed for 254 yards and 2 touchdowns. He was not a factor for the Chiefs in the playoffs at all. Even with Clyde Edwards-Helaire out, Bell only got the ball twice in the divisional round win over the Browns. He was inactive in the AFC Championship game against the Bills. He was in uniform, but he didn't play in the Super Bowl. So he's a free agent, hadn't signed with anybody, but, man, you know, it just kind of lets you know who he is. Like, Le'Veon Bell, since leaving the Steelers, and even when he sat out because he thought that his contract was not great, like, he got a good deal, not a great deal, from the Jets. Didn't he get paid less with the Jets than he would have made with the Steelers? Do I remember that right?
Well, no.
It was similar.
No, not close. The Steelers didn't have an offer for him. So I thought
Steelers offered him, but he refused the offer.
He made way less money than he thought he was going to make. Like, he was demanding, I don't know, like $17 million a year, $20 million a year, something. Like, he wanted wide receiver money.
Yeah.
And then they gave him like a fraction of that.
It kind of seems just now, right? I mean, it's...
he was a product of a really good offensive line and a really good offensive system.
Yes, he was.
And he was really talented at that time. But we've seen this with running backs. When that wall hits, there's not a slow decline where you go from being a 1,000-yard rusher to a 700-yard rusher to a 500-yard rusher to 300. Like, that's not how the RB game is played. The RB game is you could be a 1,000-yard rusher 1 year, and then you could be unemployed the next.
Yes, very much so.
When that wall comes, it comes for you fast.
And it's a big reason why we have said forever, And a lot of the smart analytics people say, do not draft a running back in the first round.
Draft a running back in the first round, and I would never give one a second contract. Yeah. Now, I would pay a second contract if it's reasonable, but, I mean, you're going to feel insulted when I give you your second contract.
Yeah, like Derrick Henry's contract, while big, it was a 2-year deal, and the entire offense is kind of built around him.
And if you're going to do it, you got to do short deals.
Yeah.
You got to do short-term, super short-term deals.
And there are exceptions to the rule and whatnot, with Derrick Henry being about the only one. But even Christian McCaffrey, you know, his massive deal, he
didn't play 80% of last year, and the guy that took his place didn't put up his kind of numbers, but the offense was not the problem.
No, he got close.
Like, Christian McCaffrey would not have, if you're using war as a stat, Christian McCaffrey would not have equated to another win on their record. And at the end of the day, this isn't fantasy football. You're trying to get wins, and the RB difference is not a differentiating factor for wins. Also, by the way, I would like to go back to my Julio Jones, because I've gotten a lot of shit from people on Julio about my attack on him. And it wasn't an attack. I just thought it was overpaid, and I gave my information why. Outside of Randy Moss, outside of the second greatest wide receiver to ever put on shoulder pads, no wide receiver has ever been traded for or signed a second contract with a new team and actually made a difference in that team's wins or losses.
That's interesting.
Amari Cooper came over to the Cowboys, and it was his second year when he actually did something special. His first year, he was really good the first couple of games, and then it kind of teetered off. Like, if you look at all these wide receivers that change teams or get traded or sign as free agents or go somewhere else, those teams aren't a whole lot better or worse off than they were, even when they're big-name stars.
Yeah, it's not them by themselves that makes a difference.
That's right.
It's
they were great in a system, and they were great. And that doesn't take once again, Julio is an unbelievable talent.
Yes.
He is an incredible talent, but he still is not perfect. He still has flaws.
Of course.
And I don't think his flaws were worth what you could have gotten with that draft pick next year. Unless you think you're playing for the Super Bowl this year, which I do not think the Titans are, then I would not have made that trade. That was my argument for the thing. You got to look at these trades as 2 or 3 year deals, and that's it. And I would rather have the rookie in the second round that you're going to get next year at the wide receiver's position. Because if you're trading for a wide receiver, you got to draft a wide receiver. Okay.
Truth.
And let's just look at next year's wide receiver second round class. And we'll see in 2 years of that guy's career, would you rather have them or Julio?
Tying this back around, is there, do you see Le'Veon Bell playing for anybody else going forward? Do you think he gets picked up?
Well, yeah, he could probably pick up a job because wide receivers go down. I mean, that's a position that people go down. And they, when they bring in new wide receivers, they really want to bring in veterans because they know blocking schemes. They understand, you know, he's been in the league enough to where he's seen a lot of different offenses.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, you know, if I was desperate for a running back because my guys all went down, I'd give him a look. I'd give him a call, obviously, but he's going to be a you know, a minimum payment guy.
Yeah. I doubt anybody signs him before the season. I think he's an in-season pick.
I don't foresee him getting a job before the season unless somebody has some major injury problems in the offseason.
Yep. Yep. You are correct. We will close out the sports side of this. UFC 263. I'm not going to spend a long time on it, but everybody that listens to this regularly knows I am a massive UFC fan, and UFC 263 was awesome. It was great. Now, Stylebender, you know, he dominated his fight against Vettori. That's great. Whatever. Brandon Moreno, he is the first ever Mexican champ. That's a big deal. That was a pretty good fight. He won by submission, so that's big. And Bilal Muhammad beat Damian Maya. That was expected. None of my underdog hits won. So I'm, you know, whatever. But the story of the night, even in defeat, was Nate Diaz. And there are very few athletes, I feel like, in UFC or anything else, where even in a loss, they do something that is so incredible that they become the story. Like, Leon Edwards pretty much dominated that fight for the entire five rounds. And in the last minute and a half, Nate Diaz came back with his typical look, right? Blood all over his face. He got kind of demolished, but you can't ever knock this guy out. You can't submit him. You can't, you know, you have to go to decision with this guy if you're going to beat him. And he came back with a flurry, man. He caught Edwards multiple times, and I thought he was going to come back and win that fight, man. It had, I think everybody that was watching was so excited about the prospects of him knocking him out at the very last second. You remember we were sitting in Hollywood Casino down in Tunica, and you and I were watching Derek Lewis and, God, who was the other guy? Some tall dude, and he knocked out whatever the guy's name was. Not Volkanovski. Maybe, that might have been. Either way, he knocked out somebody. He had lost all three rounds, and he knocked this guy out with like 5 seconds left. I thought that's what we were going to get from Diaz. And even with another loss, like Diaz has now lost his last two fights, one to Jorge Masvidal, one to Leon Edwards, both exceptional fighters. I would still watch Diaz fight again. I don't care how many times he loses. He makes every fight entertaining. He doesn't go out. Like, it's unbelievable. I mean, would you fight or would you watch Diaz again against
him? Yeah, I think Diaz is a great fighter, and he's a lot of fun to watch. No doubt. No doubt.
And he's always a challenge, man. He's always a threat to somebody. I would love to see him and Masvidal do it again. You know, because the doctor stopped the first one. I mean, there's so many different fights you could make with Diaz. Golly. So that was a lot of fun. That was the most entertaining fight of the night just because of that last minute and a half in the fifth round. It was so good. So good. All right, I got two weird stories that I want to read over to you. All right?
All right.
First one. Michael Packard, 56, of Wellfleet, told WBZ-TV after he was released from Cape Cod Hospital that he was about 45 feet deep in the waters off Provincetown when all of a sudden I felt this huge bump and everything went dark. Now, do you know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
A commercial lobster diver got caught in the mouth of a humpback whale off the coast of Cape Cod Friday morning. He thought he was going to die. He got swallowed by a friggin' whale, man. What the hell is this? Have we got whales out swallowing people now? I mean, I'm going to the beach
you're
in a month.
In the ocean, baby. They're looking for food. You're looking for food, and they're looking for food.
I mean, you'd have to be pretty deep to get swallowed by a whale.
Yes.
There's, yes. You know, me going to the beach, I don't think I got anything to worry about. He thought it was a shark initially. because those are apparently pretty common in those waters, which, of course, I would not be in those waters if
I knew. But the thing about it being a shark is there's zero chance a shark's going to swallow you whole.
Exactly. I mean, it'd have to be a monster shark, man.
Yeah, I don't know. If you're a grown man, which I saw his picture, he's a grown man. He's not my size grown, but he's a big dude. There's no shark that would open their mouth and get you in without biting you.
No. I mean, you would have to take some...
They also enjoy the taste of blood. They don't want to swallow you whole.
Yeah, exactly. It says the whale surfaced, shook its head, and spit him out. He was rescued by his crewmate on the surface boat. This is nuts, man. Apparently, this is not common. It said humpbacks are not aggressive. Mayo thinks it was an accidental encounter while the whale was feeding on fish, likely sand lance, whatever that is. I could not imagine
being... I'm trying to figure out why the whale spit him out. Was it a thing where, like, you know how, like, you as a person, a human, would take, like, too big of a bite? You'd be like, all right, that's not right. Whatever I just put in my mouth, I got to get this out of here. Like, was it that? Because he can't chew up his food. Like, that's not how whales eat.
Yeah, it said that he knew that the whale was trying to swallow him. And he apparently fought inside the whale's mouth.
So if he was trying to fight his way out.
Yeah, he was in there for like 30 or 40 seconds.
And that would probably make the whale gag him up.
Yeah, I think so. But that is crazy. That is crazy, man.
Jeez, man. That is insane. I saw this picture. I saw the story. That's insane.
All right. And anybody that knows us knows that we both have dogs. We both talk about our dogs pretty regularly on the show, I would think. Did you see this? There was a dog ejected from a vehicle in an Idaho crash. Now, can you guess? The dog was gone for 2 days. It was ejected from the vehicle in a crash. They found it 2 days later. Do you know what it was doing?
No, but I'm assuming it's like looking for its owner, probably.
It was herding sheep.
Yeah, just picked up a job. Listen, this is like the greatest dog in the world. I got thrown from a car. I didn't die. What was the first thing you got to do? I lost my master. Yep, I got to find food. Let's go get a job.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So it was out herding sheep. It was a Australian sheepdog. And yeah, I mean, it was just doing what it was supposed to do, apparently. It said it was doing the job it was bred to do. It said Linda Oswald's family and their dog Tilly were driving along Idaho State Highway 41 on Sunday. They crashed into another car, launched the dog through the rear window, and the unharmed dog ran away, prompting an immediate search with at least six complete strangers who witnessed the crash and tried to help. They all kept going out, and I mean, they found it 2 days later. It was a 2-year-old border collie and Reed Heeler mix. Okay, that's what it was. More than 3,000 people shared the post on Facebook, and these people recognized the dog from the photo. And they saw the dog on their family farm south of Rathdrum on Tuesday. Like, 2 days later, this dog just picks up, like, all right, well, let's knock it out. Like, absolutely cracked me up, man.
Animals are amazing. They're always going to go back to their instincts, okay? Like I have a blue pit, right?
Yeah.
And he lives the life of luxury, okay? He needs nor wants for anything. All right. But he's still a dog and he still has this aggression in him. Now, he has been trained. He's well behaved. He doesn't show it towards humans at all. But vermin that come in our yard.
Oh, yeah.
Like we get moles, squirrels, like birds fly into my sunroom all the time. Like he'll jump up, catch them in the air. Now, because he doesn't have to fight for food, he doesn't eat them. He just kills them and plays with them. Like, he just keeps their bodies around and, like, slings them around.
How's, by the way, sorry to interrupt you. Didn't he have ACL surgery again the other day?
Yeah.
Like, the other knee or leg?
Wednesday, he had a second ACL surgery.
So is he healing up okay? Tell everybody again why he had ACL surgery.
We don't know. I mean, he had two blown ACLs. He had ACL blown in both his back legs. I have no idea how or why he did it. I just know he's a complete maniac. When he wants to go after these animals that come in our backyard,
or the ones him. Didn't he get over the fence or through the fence?
No, he goes through the fence. So picture Kool-Aid Man, and I'm not exaggerating. I have a wooden fence. All right. It's a well-built fence. It's not some shitty built fence. Use good, strong cedar wood, high end, back when I had money. And we just built this fence. And he used to, when he was younger and smaller, would, you know, you got the cross beam across the bottom, right? And you got a little bit of picket fence underneath that. He would bite the pickets and snap them off on that cross beam and then dig just enough to get his body under there. So he's that strong. Well, now he's gotten too big to where he can't get under the fence. Okay.
Yeah.
That doesn't work. So now the middle section, bottom cross beam, middle cross beam, he just Kool-Aid. I'm not exaggerating. Kool-Aid Man's straight through them.
That is so ridiculous.
I have sections, and I've got pictures on my phone. I have sections of two or three planks that are just smashed through.
Good gracious.
He is an animal. He's just a monster when he wants to get after. And I know there's like raccoons that live behind my house, and they just piss him off constantly. Yep. And
so he just busts through Kool-Aid Man.
When he gets through, he's usually bloodied and scratched up, but they're all dead.
There you go. Good gracious.
But
good
he's always going to go back to his instincts of doing what he was bred to do or what he was born to do, which is kill things.
Yeah.
Hunt for food. He was a hunting dog. That's what pits were, you know, bred for, hunting, working dogs. And that's, you know, this dog was bred to herd sheep. He just naturally going to go do that.
And he found himself a little farm.
He's going to find sheep.
He's going to go find sheep.
This is what I'm supposed to do.
He's going to find a job.
And if he found a wolf, he'd kick that wolf's ass. This is what dogs do.
It's pretty awesome.
They really are. They really are the greatest animals.
I thought it was a great story. Great story.
It's a pretty cool story. I didn't know this story, and when you told me, did I just lose you?
Nope, I'm still here. I think it turned off your
down.
Yeah, it turned off your video.
I didn't turn it off.
So, there you go.
I don't know how that happened. Anyway, what were we saying? Shit, I had like a really good point.
We were talking about dogs.
It doesn't matter. They're great. Way. I love dogs.
Yes, we do love dogs for sure. All right, we're going to close out today's show with an interview with a college football media legend. I got a chance to sit down and talk with Ivan Maizel. He is the first hire for Shannon Terry's brand new on3.com website. So talk to him about that. Talk to him about the CFB 150 from a couple of years ago. He was the lead producer, the guy that created all the content for it. We talk about that a little bit. So there's a lot to dive into with this. And he gives his idea on expansion and all that wonderful stuff. So go ahead and listen to that. And we are going to get out of here. Go to winningcureseverything.com. Go to sbrpicks.com/NCAAF. And that is going to wrap it up for us.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
We are honored to be joined by a true college football media legend who has covered the sport for 40 years now, for such media giants as Sports Illustrated, ESPN, etc. He is an FWAA Beth McGrain Award winner. Ivan Maisel, welcome to the Winning Cures Everything podcast. How are you?
Good, Gary. Thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. Now, we've got much to discuss. Obviously, you have a new job role, a new job title, a new company, all kinds of different things that that we can get into. But I do want to talk about the sport. You started covering college football with the Atlanta Constitution back in 1981. So you were already covering the sport when the whole NCAA versus Board of Regents of the University of Oklahoma Supreme Court case went down. That was, you know, Georgia and Oklahoma sued the NCAA over the right to negotiate their own TV contracts. Since that case that was in the early 80s, I think it was 83, 84, can you think of another, you know, batch of years that could have as big of an impact on college football as the most recent ones with playoff expansion talk, name, image, likeness, you know, changing transfer rules, et cetera? Can you think of anything else that was even close?
Only if you go back to the beginning of the sport when they were trying to figure out what the rules should be. I mean, you know, the transition since the Supreme Court case has been profound. And the biggest is that it made a regional sport a national sport. I mean, there's still a regional component to it. You still want to win your conference. You still want to beat your closest rival, which is usually geographic. But now, you know, the beauty of this system is that what happens in Pullman, Washington matters to people in Tallahassee, Florida. And that was never the case until the current era of deregulation on television.
So along with that, does the sport even look the same as when you first started covering it?
Well, no. I mean, certainly not in the sense of the athletes themselves. You know, they are a bigger, stronger, faster. In terms of X's and O's, it's probably, you know, the X's and O's don't change a whole lot. I mean, they change from one generation to the next, but, you know, you can have plenty of people now who claim that what's going on now is not all that different from the old single wing, you know, when more of the field was used. You know, I think, of course, everything around the sport has changed dramatically. The stadiums are bigger. Television has expanded the audience. You know, television money has expanded everything, good and bad. And so in that sense, yeah, obviously the change has been dramatic.
Now, this kind of leads us into the big news of the week. You know, Pete Thamel over at Yahoo Sports put out an article, I believe it was on Tuesday, actually, about the playoff expansion. You know, it was very recent that we just got to four teams. But I still remember before the BCS when there was no real way to match up one versus two, and now we've got four, and now they're talking about 12. You know, I'm curious your thoughts. It's a long ways from becoming official for being 12, but I'm curious whether or not this is good for the sport overall. I'm kind of torn because I remember what it was like for the regional side that you were just talking about. I remember how much each individual game mattered in the regular season. I wonder if it's just a societal shift with social media and the fact that this sport has become so national. Is it a good thing to possibly move up to 12 playoff teams?
Well, college football's leadership is great at either solving the problem that just happened or thinking about the problem at hand, and they're not all that good at figuring out what the solution, projecting what the solution will mean. You know, and the problem they have right now is that in a 4-team playoff, we have a pool of about six schools that just change position every year among the four seeds. And that's not been good for the sport in terms of interest across the country. It has diminished, you know, we went from having, I think 10 or 12 FBS conferences to okay, now it's five Power Five and five Group of Five. And now even within the Power Five, there is a widening gap, you know, among the five of them. So they're trying to fix that. And I guess if you go to 12 and you guarantee conferences spots, then maybe that interest will ratchet back up on the West Coast, you know, where the Pac-12 has been struggling and has fallen behind in television money.
The issue then becomes,
you know, what happens to the other seven spots? How many do you guarantee the Group of Five? And I think the bigger issue to what you're talking about is, okay, if you expand the playoff to where you have three rounds, instead of, well, it really would be four rounds, wouldn't it? It's four rounds instead of two. And we are going to maintain that we're concerned about the welfare of the players. You know, how do you have a 12 game schedule? You know, and you know, that's a difficult problem to fix unless you're willing to give back some money from the gate, you know, that you get from having that many home games, you know. So it's difficult to figure out. And, you know, I'm not sure that there's an answer. There's no answer that's going to please everybody. I'm sure of that.
Oh, absolutely. That's the way college football has always been, right? Not everybody's always going to be happy.
You're absolutely right.
So I do think about it, though, in terms of, you know, the regular season started to kind of be diminished, even leading back to Roy Kramer and the conference championship games, even before the BCS was a thing, when you would have, you know, an undefeated Alabama under Gene Stallings facing off against a three-loss Florida in an SEC championship game. Typical years in the past prior to that, you would have had the undefeated team be the champion and whatnot. Now, we do appreciate these conference championship games and what they bring to the sport. It's another revenue stream, et cetera. But it does make me think about maybe I'm just holding on to too much of the past, which, again, we're going to segue from that. I want to hear about the CFB 150. Now, you helped create two 11-part series, The American Game and The Greatest. There was another 8-part series on the SEC Network that was Saturdays in the South. You wrote and hosted the Down and Distance podcast, which, for anybody that is curious about the history of this sport, you kind of need to consume all of those if you have not. At 30-plus hours of content that is still streaming today. It's still being showed today. That was done for the 2019 season. I want to know, how did the planning go for that? Because it was so many details in these stories. This could not have been something that just popped up, you know, it's summer of 2018. Hey, we probably need to start prepping for this. You had to be looking into this for a while, right? What all went into it?
Well, both John Dahl, who is the executive producer of all the video content and is a longtime filmmaker at ESPN, both John Dahl and I sort of stumbled onto the upcoming 150th anniversary of the sport, exclusive of one another. And then in, I think, about 2014, somewhere in there. And we both sort of began to, if at least in our heads, think about how to do it. And then we found one another in the company early in 2016. And John had enlisted Rob Temple in sales for ESPN. And the three of us just started planning it with the tacit approval of the brass, and got it to the point where we made a presentation to the executives at ESPN, and they gave us a green light and a budget. And so then we were off.
I am so intrigued by the idea of creating 30 hours of television content. I'm amazed that you were able to do it. It's, I'm enthralled with it. I watched every episode. It was absolutely appointment television for me. And my wife thanks you for getting me out of her hair for 30 plus hours.
And then when the pandemic hit, they, you know,
oh yeah,
The network continues to. The one was running the other night. I got a text from a buddy of mine the other night said that one of the shows was on.
It just continues on and on. I do want to, as we kind of segue towards the end of this little conversation, I do want you to tell me about you being the first hire for the new site on3.com. It's being built by Shannon Terry, who founded and built Rivals and 247 Sports, among others. After so many years of covering the game, what intrigued you about jumping into kind of a new upstart?
Well, you know, ESPN did not renew my contract in February, and I had a few months where I wrote some freelance pieces and looked around, and you know, weighed in my mind that I want to just sort of go do my own thing, maybe write a book, you know, just do some freelance pieces. And I finally decided I wanted to be relevant and stay relevant. And Shannon and his team approached me and had been talking to me all along over the weeks and months once, you know, once ESPN made its decision. Excuse me. And the more we talked, the more I became intrigued with them. And, you know, their track record is very good in creating successful websites in and out of college sports. But what they want to do, which is cover recruiting and cover the sport itself and attempt to cover and explain the passion of the sport and the spectacle and why it matters so much. Well, that's exactly what I've tried to do, you know, my whole career is, you know, explain and illustrate why it's so important to people. And so, you know, we were already going in the same direction and they've got a good track record and I've got a good track record. So we just decided to bet on one another and here we are.
And it just made sense that that definitely works. Now you brought up a book. I read somewhere that that you have got a book coming out in October called "I Keep Trying to Catch His Eye." Can you tell us a bit about it? Where people can find it? You know, where it's going to be released, etc.
Well, I'd be delighted to. Publication date is October 26th. It's being published by Hachette. The book is about my relationship with our son, Max, who ended his life 6 years ago when he was 21. And I really wanted to, you know, Gary, shine a light on our relationship and how he died and my grief and how I learned to live with my grief the best way I learned to handle it was realizing that the depth of my grief was so deep because it matched the depth of my love for Max. And once that idea crystallized in my head, it really made it more tenable for me to get through each day, which is, as everybody knows who grieves, that's the hardest part. So I really wrote the book to try to be a explain grief, and so that if this happens to someone grieving a child, so that if it happens to a reader or a reader who knows someone that it happened to, they'll be able to better handle it and help somebody deal with it.
Several years ago, you did a piece with the Helsinki family, and you're still working with their foundation, right? Or are they working with you? How exactly does that work? Explain that for me.
Well, I did a piece on Mark and Kim Helsinki as his son Tyler ended his life, and of course, Tyler was a quarterback at Washington State, and Mark and Kim have done tremendous work with their foundation, Helsinki's Hope, to promote mental health solutions for student athletes. And so, you know, it's probably a little blurring of the journalism lines, but you know, anytime I can help them, I do it. You know, I've written a piece about their youngest son, Ryan. I've written a couple of pieces about Ryan being at South Carolina. He's now transferred to Northwestern. He'll be a junior quarterback for the Cats. They're doing great work, and I really recommend what they're doing to everybody who cares about college football.
Well, Ivan, we do appreciate your time today. I'm going to go ahead and let you get out of here. But everybody, of course, make sure and follow him on Twitter. You can find him at Ivan_Mazel. You can find the link in the description of the podcast, of course. And you can read him at on3.com starting in, what is it, August?
Yeah, we're going to go live in August. And I neglected to mention that there's the book can be pre-ordered already on Amazon and Barnes & Noble or by your independent bookseller or however you read books. It's available.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much for your time. Hopefully we can catch up again this fall once the season gets rolling.
Thank you, Gary. Enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for checking out Winning Cures Everything. If you want to keep up with us, hit subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast app, visit the website at winningcureseverything.com, or you can like us on Facebook or follow us at Winning Cures, at Gary WCE, or at Chris B. Giannini on Twitter. Share out the show, leave a nice review, and make sure to comment and tweet at us.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.